So this question, very easy, straightforward diagnosis of type 1 diabetes following Coxsackie B virus infection. They want to hand you the diagnosis here. They don't want you to have a guessing game because they want to ask you something more challenging, which refers to the arrow combination here. So when we have acute diabetes, assuming this is diabetic ketoacidosis, then our starting point is looking at the first column, beta-hydroxybutyrate. Obviously, various students will say, "What the fuck is that?" It's just one of the ketones. Okay, so it's just we expect an up arrow for that, so we immediately can just eliminate half of our answer choices right away, all the bottom ones, the down arrow. So now we're just left with increased beta-hydroxybutyrate. Okay, it's a ketone, and then our next column refers to serum osmolality because we have high glucose in the blood. In DKA, our serum osmolality is going to be increased. Okay, the glucose generates an osmotic pull. So, because we have a deficiency of insulin, we have decreased expression of GLUT4 on the surface of adipocytes, skeletal muscle. So, there's no way for the glucose to get into the cells, so it just builds up in the blood. Normal fasting glucose is 72 to 99 milligrams per deciliter. Impaired fasting is 100 to 125, and diabetes is greater than 126 milligrams per deciliter fasting on two occasions. Any one random glucose greater than 200 milligrams per deciliter is also consistent with diabetes, or an HbA1c of 6.5% or greater. The point is, we have increased ketone bodies, increased beta-hydroxybutyrate, and we've got increased serum osmolality due to the glucose. Then we look at the serum sodium. It's going to be decreased in DKA. Okay, so we want a down arrow for serum sodium, and this is because of dilution. This is called dilutional hyponatremia, where the high glucose in the blood, that increased osmolality, it's going to function to retain some serum volume, or plasma volume, and that's going to dilute out the sodium. That's the main mechanism. There's also discussion as far as SGLT2, increased activation in the PCT, the kidney, because there's going to be overdrive to reabsorb all the glucose that's being filtered through the glomerulus, and that will also function to affect serum sodium. But when you get a down arrow for serum sodium in DKA, your main thought for USMLE purposes should be that that's a dilutional hyponatremia because of the increased serum osmolality with the glucose pulling all that plasma, retaining that plasma volume. So down arrow serum sodium, we would have an up arrow for serum potassium, okay? And we'd have a down arrow for total body potassium. Obviously, it's not a focus of this question, but I can just say real quick that our serum potassium is increased because insulin normally drives potassium into the cells. So if we don't have that effect, serum potassium is going to build up, isn't it? We're also going to have, because of the ketone bodies that are acidic, the ketoacidosis. There's a proton-potassium exchange where cells are going to be being flushed with protons. So protons go into the cells, potassium moves out of the cell to balance charge. So that further increases your serum potassium. And also just if you have less glucose entering the cell via insulin, then you have less activation of sodium-potassium ATPase pumps where sodium is pumped out of the cell and potassium is pumped in. So if you have less potassium being pumped into the cell via the sodium potassium ATPase pumps, potassium builds up in the blood. So that's three mechanisms for increased potassium in the blood: direct, it being pushed directly into the cell via insulin, which we don't have, proton potassium exchange, and also the sodium potassium ATPase pumps. Because the sodium doesn't come out of the cell via the ATPase pumps, that can also be yet another mechanism for why serum sodium could be considered low. But as I said, it's mostly a dilutional effect. Then we look at the anion gap. This is easy. So this is going to be a high anion gap. Okay. So it's one of the mud piles diagnoses, D in mud piles, DKA. So mud piles refers to high anion gap metabolic acidosis, methanol, uremia. Uremia is renal failure, DKA. P is fenformin, some weird drug you don't need to know. I is iron tablets or isoniazid, the drug for TB. L, lactic acidosis. E, ethylene glycol, which is antifreeze. And S, salicylates, refers to aspirin toxicity. So anion gap is calculated by adding your serum chloride, and bicarbonate, taking that number and subtracting it from sodium. So anion gap should normally be 8 to 12, and if it's greater than 12, so 13 or greater, that's considered high anion gap. So if you ever get a numerical question, rather than arrows qualitatively, if you get a quantitative numerical question with sodium, bicarb, chloride, you need to be able to calculate anion gap for USMLE. Okay, so once again, chloride plus bicarb, take that number, subtract it from sodium, and that will be 13 or greater. So looking at our answer choices here, our final answer is increased beta-hydroxybutyrate, increased serum osmolality, we have decreased serum sodium, and we have increased anion gap. Okay, that's diabetes. That's it.